translation. The mercantile community should always follow the directions of the brahmanas and engage in such occupational duties as agriculture, trade, and protection of cows. For the shudras, the only duty is to accept a master from a higher social order and engage in his service. Please repeat. The mercantile community should always follow the directions of the brahmanas and engage in such occupational duties as agriculture, trade, and protection of cows. For the shudras, the only duty is to accept a master from a higher social order and engage in his service. No purport, so we'll go on to text 16. Varta vichitra shalina yayavara shilonchanam vipravritish chaturdeyam shreyasi chotarotara. Do we normally do the word for word on that second one? No. Translation. As an alternative, a brahmana may also take to the vaishya's occupational duty of agriculture, cow protection, or trade. He may depend on that which he has received without begging. He may beg in the paddy field every day. He may collect paddy left in a field by its proprietor. Or he may collect food grains left here and there in the shops of grain dealers. These are four means of livelihood that may also be adopted by brahmanas. Among these four, each of them in succession is better than the one preceding it. Please repeat. As an alternative, a brahmana may also take to the vaishya's occupational duty of agriculture, cow protection, or trade. He may depend on that which he has received without begging. He may beg in the paddy field every day. He may collect paddy left in a field by its proprietor. Or he may collect food grains left here and there in the shops of grain dealers. These are four means of livelihood that may also be adopted by brahmanas. Among these four, each of them in succession is better than the one preceding it. Purport. A brahmana is sometimes offered land and cows in charity, and thus for his livelihood he may act in the same way as a vaishya, by cultivating land, giving protection to cows, and trading off his surpluses. A better process, however, is to pick up grains from a field or from a dealer's shop without begging. Amagyana timrindasya gananjana shalakaya chakshura unmilitamina tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born blinded by the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual masters are opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I therefore offer my humble obeisances unto them. Namo om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upasthaya Bhutale Srimate Shivaram Swaminata Namane. Namo om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Upasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminata Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Prachane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prashkatandishtane. Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langai Te Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vandeshi Gurum Dinatarnam. Narayanam Namaskritan Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Madirayat. Srinvatas Sharya Nityam Grinatas Chasva Chastikam Kalina Natidirgina Bhagavan Vishate Hridi. So we're in this section called The Perfect Society, Four Social Classes. It's examining the whole system of Varnashram that Krishna set up in order to help elevate those in the human form of life. just to get to just starting off with a few sort of fundamental points. This material world, we need to first of all understand its ontological nature, its essential reality, is that the material world is a place of suffering, and the Bhagavad Gita says, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, temporary and full of miseries, and it's a struggle for existence. Sometimes we see people, they're not struggling so much, they're born with a silver spoon in their mouth. Of course we can understand that they've struggled in the past. Who knows how many lifetimes has culminated in this kind of so-called life of ease and luxury. But they have struggled. And it's constitutionally a place of struggle. It's temporary, it's full of ignorance, and it's miserable. This is the nature of the material energy, the material world that we're in. And spiritual world, of course, is Satchitananda, is eternal, full of knowledge and blissful. The material world is temporary, full of misery, full of ignorance. And someone might sort of complain that, well, this is, you know, here we are in the material world. It's constitutionally a place of suffering. It's a miserable place. You know, how come God created this place? Such a lousy place. Miserable, full of suffering, temporary. Why didn't he create somewhere that's eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss? The answer is, of course, that Krishna did create such a place. But we weren't satisfied there. We weren't satisfied there because Krishna's there. So we weren't satisfied because we thought, I'd like to be here if I was Krishna. If I was the center of it all. And it's not Krishna's fault that Krishna is Krishna, that Krishna is God. That's just who he is. You can't blame someone for being who they are. And it's very irrational to be envious of another person. Because we're who we are, and if we're in our pure identity, we're also Satchitananda, and we're fully satisfied. We're actually, Krishna's created us as his energies. We're parts and parcels of Krishna. So the ecstasy Krishna's experiencing, we can also experience. There's been classes in just recently about how in the spiritual world, the citizens in the spiritual world can exhibit even greater power than Krishna. They can exceed Krishna. Sometimes Prabhupada would say that you know, people who aspire to be one with God, you know, why aspire to be one with God? Why not aspire to be greater than God? Of course, that capacity to be greater than God is just an aspect of rasa, an aspect of loving exchange. In the same way that a father, you know, with his child, might let the child defeat him in wrestling. So that child's has exhibited greater power than the father. But of course, it's all been bestowed by the father because there's a loving exchange. So this is where we're situated, in a temporary place that's full of misery, that's full of ignorance, and it's a struggle for existence. So therefore, there has to be some way of getting out of here. And the Varnashram system has been given by Krishna for that purpose. There's verses in the Bhagavatam that say that unless one adheres to a process of devotion, whether it be karma yoga, jnana yoga, or ashtanga yoga. But there has to be an element of devotion in all of these structured systems. Unless one practices and surrenders to such a system, there is no means of escaping from this material realm. There is actually no way or means of escape. So Varnashram gives us a means of escaping, of actually refining ourselves and elevating ourselves and making advancement. There are these four ashrams and there are these four varnas. And it's examining a little here what is the system for vaishyas and shudras. The vaishyas and shudras. The point of it all is that it's very hierarchical. The varnashram system is very hierarchical. And at the top of this hierarchy is Krishna. And then the first representative of Krishna are the brahmanas. So they're the highest authority in this system. And of course Krishna is their authority. And then come the kshatriyas, and then come the vaishyas, and then come the shudras. So everyone has their authority. Everyone's situated within a discipline, within a structure. The Bhagavad Gita talks a lot about the importance of structure and the importance of regulation. It's explained in so many places that without this, the mind becomes, the mind just automatically assumes a certain status of being the authority. Without that structure, the mind is willing to start its kind of yap that, oh, I don't feel like doing this. Why don't you do this? All very whimsical, all according to the modes of nature. But when the mind is situated within a structure, it might well say, oh, I don't feel like going out today. I don't feel like doing this. But you're situated within a structure and certain forces are acting on you. And then the mind realizes, well, I'm not going to, you know, this structure is more, it's actually more powerful than I am. It's more powerful than I am. It's just like, you know, people go to work. Sometimes you don't feel like getting up in the morning and then you think, well, I'm within a structure. I have to go to work. If I don't go to work, then I'll get sacked and then you start to sort of like pan out or extrapolate, you know, down the line. And if I get sacked, then I can't pay the rent. If I can't pay the rent, I'm on the street and, okay, it's not a good idea. I better tell my mind just to, you know, stop yapping and just get out of bed and take a shower and go to work. And the thing about the mind is that the mind is at its most powerful whenever it can feel a wobble in your resolve. As soon as you start umming and ahhing, you know, okay, should I or shouldn't I? Then the mind is really starts to kick in. You know, great, you know. So the mind can come up with unlimited arguments and reasons and justifications to deviate you from the path. But if there's no wobble there, if the person has actually got commitment to the structure, then the mind suddenly, instead of becoming a nuisance, instead of becoming distraction, instead of becoming a distraction, it actually starts to, you know, get into the, helps the momentum of being on the path. The mind, as it says, the mind can be your worst enemy or it can be your best friend. And the way to make it your best friend is to not give it an inch of space to start, you know, coming up with its justifications and its speculative reasoning. We don't need this speculation. We just need to be given a structure by the Varnashram, by higher authority, basically. We need a structure from higher authority that's ultimately coming from Krishna. And then we can start to become fluent and fluid and spontaneous and get on with making advancement. So this Varnashram is a very important aspect of going back to Godhead. Prabhupada would in many places say it's bringing people out of the animal culture into civilized culture, this Varnashram system. And it's actually considered sinful not to be situated securely within the Varnashram system. For instance, we should at any given point either be in the Brahmachari ashram, the Grihastha ashram, the Vanaprastha ashram, or the Sannyasa ashram. I mean, we shouldn't be just floating indefinitely somewhere in the, you know, on the outskirts. We should be in one of these ashrams and then make those progressions. And similarly, you know, Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Brahman. Of course, there is what's called upward and downward mobility in these different categories, right? So someone may progress from Brahmachari to Grihastha or Brahmacharini to Grihastha, like that. It's meant to happen. Similarly, according to qualification, you're in your Varna, according to your qualification. You may acquire a qualification and move up. You may lose a qualification and move down. It's not according to birth. That's really stated so clearly. It's not according to birth. It's not a sort of caste system. It's not a caste system. It's a dynamic system. And that's what makes it wonderful, is that it's a dynamic system. I was thinking recently how I got this realization a week ago when I was just finishing a game of tennis, and one of the devotees that I was playing with, he was saying, "Oh, this, you know, Roger Federer is such an incredible player," and he said that there was this thing on that he saw him do, that some chap put an apple on his head, a bit like William Tell's story. Did you see this as well? Did you? And he threw the ball up in the air and he served, hit it as hard as he could, and he hit the apple off the guy's head. such a kind of talent, such a skill. He did it twice in a row and hit the apple off his head. And I said, "Oh, that's just empowered." I said, "No, he's just empowered by Krishna." And then this devotee said, "Oh, yeah." And this devotee is a great sort of sport lover. He said, "There's this guy called Ronnie O'Sullivan, and he's so good at snooker. And he's cleared the table in like a record time. And he's just got so much focus, so much." I said, "Yeah, he's empowered. That's actually Krishna's the ability in man. So Krishna's giving this ability." Then I got the realization. I said to him, "You know, but what happens to these guys when, because they're not recognizing that Krishna is the ability in man, that this ability is coming from Krishna. They're not acknowledging that, and they're not expressing gratitude to Krishna for this ability. So what's going to happen to them? And what's going to happen to this ability?" And he sort of shrugged his shoulders. And I said, "Well, as far as I can tell, you know, when they lose that ability, they pretty much lose their identity with it. And a lot of them end up having nervous breakdowns. And then he said, yeah, Ronnie O'Sullivan is going through a depression right now. He's going to see counselors and psychologists because he's actually, you know, he's no longer the world champion. He was the world champion, and I think his kind of place in the seedings is going down. And now he's having mental problems, depression and things like that, because he's identifying with this ability that's not actually his, that doesn't belong to him. I remember once Sri Dayananda Maharaj said, if you want to be emotionally invulnerable, don't take anything that's not yours. Don't take anything that's not yours. So in the same way, like in society, if a thief takes something that's not his, he feels insecure. The police could knock on my door any time. They're vulnerable. They've taken something that's not theirs. In the same way, on a more subtle level, if you take credit for what's not yours, something that's ultimately coming from Krishna, you're vulnerable. You're very vulnerable. You know, you're actually entering into what's called the false ego. And then you become vulnerable. But as long as you give that acknowledgement, that credit, that gratitude, then you can then make the transitions. You can get this mobility thing happening. Now, devotees acknowledge, you know, if they have an ability, then they acknowledge it's coming from Krishna. And we can make the transitions. You know, we can make the transitions. You know, not just from service to service, but from ashram to ashram, and if needed, from varna to varna, can make the transitions. Because the devotee knows Krishna's not partial. He doesn't mind what service you do. He just wants your association, whatever the service is, doesn't mind. He doesn't rate one service better than another. The spider's service, when he was picking up the pebble, was given equal value as Hanuman's service when he was picking up the massive rock. So, you know, when I was thinking in the marathon that some devotees, their service is to do sewing. They made the transition to book distribution. And they're out there on the field distributing books. Some devotees, you know, their service is the Harinam. And they went out. There was one, Jai Gopal told me that there was one lady in Cambridge, I think the ladies know who she was. She's got a full-time job, and she took on her holidays. She took her holidays in December just so she could go out on the marathon. She made that transition. But the conditioned souls, you know, I was reading on the BBC that Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Sri Sri Gauranitai Ki Jai. I was reading on the BBC how actually there's so many sporting figures. This whole subject was brought up because quite recently the manager of the Wales football team committed suicide. There was a certain depression there. He obviously wasn't making the transitions, as we all must. It's not an easy thing, kind of entering into the unknown. Transition means you're entering into some unknown realm. But chanting Hare Krishna is the greatest support and the greatest greatest support for actually moving into the unknown. There isn't anything better. The ironic thing, I find this very, very ironic, that you know, when we're talking about Satchitananda, eternality, knowledge, and bliss, we're talking about desire to be free, desire for freedom. That's really the, you know, freedom not to have to succumb to old age and death, freedom not to succumb to ignorance. There's a greater freedom in knowledge than there is in ignorance. If you're, you know, if the whole spectrum of possibility is, say, this wide, and you're ignorant of this half of the possibilities, you're only aware of this half, your freedom of choice is limited by the extent of your ignorance. Your freedom of choice is limited. So there's a greater freedom in knowledge having this many options than in having this many options. It's a greater freedom. There's a greater freedom in being eternal than there is in being temporary. And there's a greater freedom in being happy than there is in being ignorant. So everyone's searching for this freedom. But the great irony is that in the modern Kali Yuga, people think that their freedom comes from breaking the conventions or breaking the sort of laws of morality. This freedom in, you know, I'm free to take drugs, I'm free to have sex, I'm free to eat meat if I want to. But just as in the Bhagavad Gita, it's explored this whole subject of the modes of nature. There's everything according to the modes. So there's also freedom according to the modes. And freedom in the mode of ignorance is where you express your freedom in such a way that you end up losing the freedom that you had in the first place. And freedom in the mode of passion simply just perpetuates a sort of status quo of hankering and lamenting. You know, wanting something, you know, okay, you know, I've got to perform this yajna, okay, I'll use my free will to perform this. But you're just always on this treadmill of just wanting something, you know, seeking the fruits. And freedom in the mode of goodness is where you're using your free will in such a way that you're actually expanding your free will. You're actually getting greater freedom to express your free will, to express yourself. There are these three modes operating all the time. There was one chap called Bill Hicks. I don't know if anyone's heard of him. He's a comedian, but he's a sort of social commentator as well. And he was giving a little talk about how America is got this very sort of conformist streak in it, and he would often just as a statement, this is an interesting subject, and I haven't fully sort of come to my own conclusion about it, but he would often burn the American flag because he said and he would get into trouble for it. And then he would say, you know, people come up to me when I burn the American flag and they say, you know, I fought in the war for that flag. You know, people have died for that flag. You know, what you doing there, boy? You know, and getting really angry at him. And he said, well, those people who died for this flag died for the freedom that this flag represents. This flag is meant to represent freedom, and if it's real freedom that it represents, then I should also have the freedom to burn it. That's his whole thing, right? And that's fair enough, you know. The point is Krishna has given everybody their free will. But if you, like I was saying about the freedom in the different modes, if you use your freedom in the mode of ignorance, your freedom will diminish. Just as if you have, you know, if you take drugs, then, and if you drink alcohol, then your whole world starts to diminish. Because this is a very, you know, selfish, materialistic behavior. And everything material is going to deteriorate and diminish. So you're using your free, that freedom that you're misusing just simply gets smaller and smaller. And sometimes people's brains are so scrambled they just lose their freedom altogether. They lose their human form of life. Socrates said that the human form of life, the symptom of it is the ability to be enchanted and to be in wonder, to be in wonder at the creation, and therefore to explore, to see life as being an adventure of exploration. So this is the human form of life as defined by Socrates. So if you're going to scramble your brain with drugs or scramble your brain with alcohol, you don't have that freedom to sort of see life as an adventure and to explore the enchanting world. That's not there anymore. That's lost. You've lost that, you know, some time ago when you misused your freedom. So the Varna Ashram, if you situate yourself correctly in it and perform your prescribed duties through that regulation, that's why the Bhagavad Gita calls it the regulative principles of freedom. The freedom comes from the structure and from the regulation. And that's how it works. So this Varna Ashram system is a catalyst for becoming liberated. And Prabhupada once defined liberation. He defined liberation as being devotional service without human mistakes. That was his definition in one somewhere. I can't remember where. Devotional service without human mistakes. So, you know, in a Varnashram system, structured system, you're getting feedback, you're getting purified, and you're evolving to the point where you can do your service and you don't have this, it's a transcendental, you become transcendental, ultimately. And doing service without the frailties of human mistakes. Thank you very much. Any comments? Any questions?